Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from the University of Central Florida, offering their Master's of Science in Data Analytics program. Designed to enhance skills in data analysis and machine learning, the new Artificial Intelligence track offers specialized courses to deepen understanding of AI technologies and their applications. More at ce.ucf.edu/data.
Welcome into Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton, and coming up today, parkour and circus performing classes for 80-year-olds. The publishing pioneer and do-it-yourself home-building icon, now in his 90s and still driven by a passion to create, and the chain of inspiration, the 40-something woman who is back in the pool, inspired by 80 and 90-year-olds and driven by a desire to inspire her own daughter. Well, as you folks probably know, Growing Boulder is in the business of changing the narrative around aging, and it's really not easy because we've lived in an ageist culture our entire lives. When we were young, our grandparents were nothing like many older adults are today. Turning 70 or 80 really was the beginning of the end and not the beginning of what's next. And if there were active older adults, they were ignored by the media, or they were presented as outliers, genetic super freaks who were there simply to amuse us, not to inspire us to believe that more is possible. We didn't have access to the kind of active aging influencers that we have today, which is one of the good things about social media. What we had was one study after another telling us that we were destined by biological design to rapidly lose muscle mass, bone density, and flexibility, that life after 50 was just one slippery slope into decline, that disease, disability, and morbidity were all but unavoidable. Well, there's a new 12-year study from Dr. Becca Levy, a professor and researcher at Yale University, and it's revealed that aging doesn't just mean decline. In fact, nearly half of adults age 65 and older in this large study involving over 11,000 adults showed measurable improvement in both physical and cognitive function over time. So how can that be? Why is it so contrary to all previous studies? Well, it's because studies on large groups of older adults have always reported average results. And when you average everyone together, you do see decline. The gains experienced by many just disappear. And when the results of the studies, the average results, are published, the takeaway becomes that aging is about decline, and over time, we begin to embody those stereotypes. But when you look at individual trajectories in the same study and not the average, it's an entirely different story. A meaningful percentage, in fact, 42%, actually show improvement in both physical and cognitive function. And when you study that group, those who do improve over time, what is revealed is that the improvements are not linked to genetics. They're linked directly to how people think about aging itself, our mindset about aging. We are not limited as much by age as we are by the stories that we tell ourselves about age. Now, if you've been a Growing Boulder follower for years, you know that Dr. Levy's study pretty much reinforces what we've been promoting for nearly two decades by sharing the stories of a large group of older adults who are smashing ageist stereotypes. Erin Elu is one of a growing number of health and fitness experts who knows that more is possible as we age. She's a certified personal trainer and the creator of Agents of Movement, a podcast and a newsletter designed to support physical activity leaders who are now helping older adults overcome ageist stereotypes. So let's get with it. Erin, how you doing today?
Hi, Mark. Doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And despite what I just said about all the new research, the new studies, the new boundaries of possibility, what is your overall experience with older adults in terms of mindset, in terms of belief systems about aging? Are they getting the message that more is possible?
Some definitely are. There is definitely a cohort of older adults that are challenging the assumptions that we've made about older adults and what they're physically capable of. And a lot of them are becoming leaders in this space and leading innovative, different physical activities for their peers. And those are the people that I highlight on my podcast. Everybody from rock climbers to circus arts performers and parkour. They're leveling up what we think about people are capable of as we grow older.
You know, I love that. And I don't know whether you and I have talked about this, but internally here at Growing Boulder, we have what we call the someone like me effect. You know, that's what we have found, is that when we can share the stories of older adults that are doing cool stuff, it really has more impact than sharing the results of a study or the opinion of an expert. And it sounds like that's pretty much what you do as well.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm finding those people that are leading the way with this. They are creating those physical activity opportunities for their future selves. They want to continue these activities, and now they're offering these opportunities for other older adults to do those same activities and challenging the way we think and these assumptions that we make about what we can and can't do as we grow older.
I like that you're out there, you know, kind of on the bleeding edge, if you will, of what's possible for older adults. But you do work with adults and have for years in a variety of settings, including clinical environments, community senior centers, upscale living communities, very diverse populations. Does that make it difficult for you to do what you do? Because, you know, many people have said, if you know one 85-year-old, you know one 85-year-old.
Yeah, it doesn't make it difficult. I think a lot of times what I've seen over and over again is that older adults feel underestimated by society and by our culture. And they're looking for ways to be challenged, and they're looking for people that can see their potential. And they do want to rise to the challenge. Teaching classes in a senior living facility, I go in and, you know, we don't do chair exercise. We're getting out of the chair. And I've found that anytime you present them with a challenge and you show that trust in their abilities, people want to live up to that. And they know they're capable, and they want to be working with people that can see their potential, and so that they can maintain their physical abilities as they grow older. So I really find that a lot of times people feel underestimated, and they're up for the challenge.
And convincing older adults that more is possible is one thing, but as you've mentioned, you also work to convince fitness professionals that more is possible by sharing innovative approaches to physical activity. How much has your profession changed? How much transformation has there been in the last 10 years? Because as I said in the lead-in, for decades, there weren't a lot of people in the healthcare space, in the fitness space, in the physical therapy space that were actually pushing people to do more.
It's definitely changing. We are starting to change that and starting to offer more challenging offerings for older adults. And it's great to see. And there's still more work to be done, I think, in the fitness sector. I really want to challenge the idea that we're offering classes based on age and not ability. So we have these classes called senior yoga or senior fitness or older adult exercise. And I challenge that. Why are we doing that? Why are we creating classes based on somebody's age? That should just be totally age neutralized. It's almost like we're saying, if you're older, you need a different exercise experience than somebody else. So that needs to be eliminated. And even with our images that we show, we get inundated with so many images of older adults sitting in chairs holding tiny dumbbells to promote physical activity programs and exercise. And so many of the times that we offer these senior classes, we default to chair, low impact. And we know that there's such a diverse range of abilities in older adults that if we're just going to assume that they want something light and seated, we're underestimating their abilities, and we're missing out on a chance to challenge them. So that's why I really want to challenge our industry to do, is to stop with the age specifying classes and to really show older adults in all of our marketing images, not just for the chair exercise classes, not just for Tai Chi. Those exercise classes are great. They have value for certain people. But if we're offering high intensity interval training, show older adults in those marketing images. We need to show that we believe that they are capable for a range of activities. Those are some of the biggest areas that I see that we can offer improvements in the fitness industry. And then fighting against this anti-aging, exercise will keep you young messaging. The goal is to grow older. We are all on this aging journey. Nobody's getting younger. And so when we use this language of this will keep you young, it's showing our value in young people, and we need to honor this aging experience and really celebrate aging and show a different narrative of what aging can mean.
You know, at Growing Bolder, we talk a lot about the importance of mindset, the impact that believing that what you're doing is going to improve the outcome, how important that is. From your perception, Aaron, how limiting are misconceptions about aging? How prevalent are misconceptions still about aging? And how do those misconceptions limit someone's potential?
They're very prevalent. I've had a number of stories that I've had, just personal experiences I've had where a senior living community will only offer chair exercises. They do not offer standing options. Even the spaces that we put people in, we only have tiny dumbbells available for older adults and chairs. And that is communicating what we expect of them. This is very prevalent just from what I've seen and a lot of times what I've seen in marketing images, you know, of places that I've worked. So there's still a lot of work to do to challenge this. And I think those of us that see this ageism show up, it's up to us to call this out. And for the older adults that are experiencing this, they should be calling this out as well. If they're feeling like they're not appropriately challenged or they're not shown what they're capable of, like we need to be pushing back against that. So it is changing, but there again, there's still work to be done in this area.
That is senior fitness expert Aaron Elu, who represents a significant change in how older adults are now being treated, and not just in the fitness industry, but in healthcare and senior living as well. Thankfully, we no longer bubble wrap older adults and encourage them to sit life out. They're encouraging them to start growing bolder. More with Aaron when we return. And later, do you remember the Whole Earth Catalog? The now 90-year-old editor joins us from his home in Northern California. Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes. Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. We're wrapping up our conversation with fitness expert Aaron Elu, who supports individuals and other fitness experts who are dedicated to smashing the many debilitating ageist stereotypes by engaging in things like parkour and circus performing. Aaron has seen firsthand how strength and agility training has transformed the lives of those who participate.
Yeah, they're engaging in life in a much fuller way. They're picking up their grandchildren. They're playing with their grandchildren. They're getting up and down from the floor because they're strong and mobile enough to do that. So that strength is really allowing them to fully engage in life and the activities that they enjoy. And then when they're led by people who believe in their capabilities and are challenging them, that's where they're seeing those results. It's not so much about the aesthetics of weight training, which I think sometimes when we're younger, we're really tuned into the looks of what, how we can look and feel when we're strength training. It's really about giving us the abilities to engage in life in a fuller way. And that, again, that shows up as in gardening and playing with grandchildren and being able to hike to areas that you want to hike to. So it's bringing more value and quality of life to older adults.
You mentioned a second ago, I want to follow up on that, that you've tell stories of older adults and innovative programs that include everything from circus performing to parkour. Tell us a little bit about a couple of those programs that have caught your interest and that you've shared with your listeners and readers.
Yeah, so a few of my favorites are, I have an instructor that is teaching low-flying trapeze to older adults. She's a circus arts performer. She got started when she was 47, and she's bringing this to women from 60 all the way up into their 90s. And she's teaching them low flying trapeze. And a lot of them came to her and said, I don't think I can do this. Do you think I'm too old? And she said, you're not too old. You build the strength when you do the exercise. And so she's showing them the way by providing a class and coaching them through that. And then there's also parkour for older adults. There is a group in Madison, Wisconsin, that is bringing older adults to playgrounds and teaching the sport of parkour, which really is essentially locomoting through our environment, getting from point A to point B in different and new and innovative ways, crawling, rolling, jumping. So they're taking people to the playground. And I've actually taught this myself at senior living communities. It's new in a variety of ways to move that is helping people build their fall resiliency, but also their confidence in their movement. And another favorite is I have a Zumba instructor who takes her participants out to grocery stores in the local area for Zumba flash mobs. And she does dancing in grocery stores, at the aquarium. And she's talked about how it's really opened up people's minds about what they think older adults are capable of when they see them dancing. And again, she's got people from their 60s all the way into their 90s, and she's putting them on display and they're performing out in the community. So it's been really fun and cool to see these people that are leading the way and offering some innovative programs.
And obviously, it's not just the individual activity itself. It's doing that activity in a group setting. It's the camaraderie, the community that's built around those activities. How important is that to success when older adults get involved in these type of programs?
It's a critical component to success. People want to feel like they are a part of something, that there are people and there's connection, and they're not just doing this alone. And that connection piece is really important, which is why I think is such a value of having group activities, is you're pulling people together to move together, but also to get to know each other. And so now you're having people connect, and we're getting that social component. So it's not just about the exercise, it's about honoring that social connection. And I think the social connection is probably even more important than the physical activity itself when people are connecting with their peers. And a lot of times this is a time of life where there's a lot of transition. Maybe people are moving, they're downsizing, they're maybe lost a spouse. And when you're pulling them together and giving them a chance to connect and be physically active, we're really improving their well-being on two fronts, the social and the physical.
You know, given that we do live in this ageist culture, I think many older adults, if not most older adults, are fearful that they're going to become injured, fearful that they can't, engage in low-flying trapeze or parkour for older adults. For those who are hesitant or fearful, maybe because they've had a past injury or years of inactivity, what's your approach to helping them take that first step? How do we get off the couch and get into life?
Yeah, I think that fear is really important to recognize and understandable, and being able to empathize with it. People have had experiences that it can make us fearful, and it's understandably so. And it's getting back to, what do you want to be engaged in? Why is that so important to you? And having a real guiding light for why you might want to improve in a certain area and address that fear. And really helping meet people where they're at, and not asking them to do something super scary, but trying to just very gently nudge their comfort zone in ways that help them to expand and start building that confidence little by little. But it's really, really about empathizing and meeting people where they're at, and not asking them to do too much, and finding that comfort zone and gently and pushing that, but really showing that you have confidence in their abilities, and that you know that they're capable and they can learn and expand and go beyond those fears.
You know, it's easy to see your passion for what you do. What changes are you seeing in general in the field of aging and fitness that excite you the most? Are today's older adults different from those that you trained a decade or more ago?
Definitely. We have older adults getting involved in all kinds of sports. I live in Colorado, and there are people of all ages, snowboarding, skiing, mountain biking, trail running. So we're definitely seeing a different kind of older adult than when we did decades ago. And it's so exciting. And I think that social media has been given a great avenue for people to show themselves and show what they're capable of that we don't normally see in mainstream media. And so for that, I'm grateful for social media, because people have an avenue to show what they're doing in all ages. And it's helping expand other people's minds of what's possible.
Yeah, it is great. We're not all role models, but in a sense, we are all influencers, because, whether we're on social media or not, if we hang out with other people, we do create ripples of impact in what we do, what we say, and how we behave. So I agree with you. I think that's, maybe the best thing about social media is that we can be exposed to people. You know, it used to be you had to have somebody living next door in order to be have a positive influence. Now they can live, in another country, and you can be moved and inspired by what they do. Aaron, if you could communicate, maybe one message to all older adults, whether they are elite athletes or just beginning, about what's truly possible as they age, what is that message? What do you want people to know about life in general?
Yeah, that you're not too old and it's not too late. Find the activities that are bringing you joy, and find the people that want to help you achieve those activities and keep you moving. Age is not a limit. And so I would encourage people to not use age as an excuse to not do certain activities and start in certain movements, but to challenge that thinking and find people that can help show you those possibilities and guide you and coach you along the way.
You know, a good teacher is always a good student as well. What have you learned from older adults over the years in working with them? How has their influence impacted your life and your thoughts about your future as you age?
Yeah, I'm consistently blown away by their resiliency. And it's not just the physical side. Yes, it's great to see people building up, you know, their strength and their balance, and to see people at all ages doing that. That's super inspiring. But there's also an emotional resiliency that comes with growing older. The more time we have on this planet, the more opportunities we have to experience grief and loss, and to see people keep showing up for life, despite that loss and the grief that they've experienced. That is incredibly inspiring to me. I've seen people come to class and even though they might have some physical struggles and they maintain their sense of humor and they engage with the community and they still find this purpose and reason to get up in the morning and show up for life. And you hear their stories. And again, we're no strangers to grief the older we get. And a lot of times, the more time we've had on this planet, the more time we have to experience that. And their resiliency is just incredibly inspiring to me.
Thank you, Erin. And you can learn more about Erin and her work on her website, agentsofmovement.com. Up next, how do you imagine your life at 90? Our next guest, a pioneer of the green architecture and do-it-yourself building movement, still lives alone in a house that he built nearly six decades ago, and he's just started his own Substack blog. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. If you were around back in the late 60s and 70s, you no doubt remember the Whole Earth catalog. That, of course, was pre-internet, and if you wanted to order something, you did it through catalogs. Whole Earth was a counterculture magazine that featured products and information to power do-it-yourselfers. It pioneered user-generated content by including reviews and suggestions from its own readers. In fact, Apple founder Steve Jobs famously called it one of the Bibles of his generation. Lloyd Kahn, who is now in his 90s, was the founding editor. Lloyd is a journalist, a best-selling author, a photographer, carpenter, a self-taught architect, and a pioneer of the green building movement. He continued to surf, to paddleboard, and to skate into his late 80s, and in his 90s, he's now launched his own Substack blog. He still lives alone in a house he began building nearly 60 years ago, and he's taking a break from his busy day to catch up with Growing Bolder. Lloyd, thanks for your time. Tell us where you are today.
Well, it's a small town called Bolinas. It's about an hour northwest of San Francisco across the Golden Gate Bridge. It's in Marin County, but it's West Marin County as opposed to the other part of Marin County like Mill Valley and Sausalito. And I came here in 1971 and bought some land for $6,000. And my building permit was $200. And I built my house out of mostly out of used building material from torn down Navy barracks at Treasure Island. And there were maybe 30 of us building homes here in the 70s in and around this town. And of course, nothing like that is possible now, but I've been here, I guess, for 55 years now. I grew up in San Francisco, so my hometown's not far away.
You know, I think we've all got stories of some sort, you know, remember when stories, but $200 for a building permit on, what, 10 acres of land? What would it cost for a similar building permit in the same location today?
Well, it's only a half acre. It's probably $70,000-$80,000 with all the, you know, bureaucrats beget ever more bureaucracy. And so now you have Coastal Commission and, you know, just a very tangled procedures and regulations that you have to go through. And so it's impossible to do what we did back then anywhere near a large city now.
Doctors will tell you, if you know one 90-year-old, you know one 90-year-old. There's a great deal of difference between those that are still alive at 90 years old. What is life like at 90 for you? Because I've seen the video of you, Lloyd, paddleboarding, skateboarding, you know, doing all sorts of cool things in your 80s. I know you've lost your wife. Do you live alone? Are you happy? What's life like?
I'm happy. I live alone. I haven't been alone since I was 12 years old and I got my first girlfriend. It's been a 2.5 years now. And I'm just kind of, you know, we built a home and a big garden on half an acre. And so now Leslie did like most of the gardening and, now I'm doing everything and I'm figuring it out, but, you know, William Blake said the busy bee has no time for sorrow. And I get up every morning and I can't imagine retiring. Now my communication is mainly with Substack and Instagram. I'm in touch with a lot of people through email. After all these years, people write and ask for advice. Where is there a school that I can learn how to build? Here's some photos of my van that I do. You know, so I keep busy. I'm still curious. I find in spite of all the horrible things going on in the world, I still find the world interesting. And I'm a compulsive communicator. And so when I discover something or I see someone doing something I think is unique or wonderful, I want to tell people about it. And so, you know, that keeps me rolling. And then I think the thing about being this age, I'll be 91 in a couple of months. The thing about being this old is that everything is new to us people that are this age. You know, we've never been this old before. And there's not much, you know, there's less and less people that I can talk to that are my own age. And I think that one of the things that has worked well for me is that for 20 years I did books on fitness and I hung out with athletes and I was seriously a competitive runner, did some triathlons. And so during those 20 years, I kind of learned the basics of staying in shape. And so I think that's helped out. But I think the thing is just you just have to keep moving. We did one book called Getting Back in Shape. And when I was doing research for the book, I found that almost every illness or every condition is helped by exercise. You know, osteoporosis, high blood pressure, even cancer, and heart conditions. So, I mean, that's the thing I think is the really important thing is to keep moving. And at my age, I hike now. I don't run anymore, but I hike. And I just got back into doing the Dipsy race, which is a local kind of a classical, the oldest cross-country race in America. It's a 7-mile race up over the mountain. And I did that for the first time in 15 years last year. And so I'm kind of training for that now. Keeping busy.
That is fabulous. Folks, we are talking to Lloyd Kahn, soon to be 91-year-old self-taught architect guru who has taught people for decades how to build their own shelter. And Lloyd, I grew up I was in college in the 70s. So I was there when the first Whole Earth catalog came out. I was fascinated by it. And folks, if you're not old enough to understand, it was a unique printed database of life-enhancing resources in the pre-internet age. In fact, Steve Jobs once described it as Google in paperback form. Lloyd, what led to the publishing of the Whole Earth catalog, and how back in the day did you get that much consumer-generated content?
Well, in the 60s, I was an insurance broker for 5 years. I ran a newspaper in the Air Force for 2 years in Germany. And when I got out in 1960, I went into the family insurance business with my dad and my uncle and my brother. So I took a leave of absence for a month in 1965 and hitchhiked across the country, spent a month wandering around and seeing what was going on in the counterculture. And I got back and I quit my job. And at that time, there was just an explosion of information going on, you know, organic gardening and farming, building your own house, communication with dolphins, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, Buddhism. All these things, they weren't new, but they were seized upon by the baby boom generation, which was a huge group, population group. And more, I found myself more in tune with people that were 10 years younger than me, than my own generation. And so I was building when I was still, you know, working in the insurance business. I would get home and work in the summertime till it was dark, and I'd work on weekends, and I got more and more into building. And so when I quit, I got a pickup truck, and I started, you know, getting work as a builder. And then I moved down to Big Sur. I had a job as a foreman building a large house out of bridge timbers on a 400-acre ranch. And we lived in the chicken coops, me and my wife and kid and the two brothers I took down there with me. And so much was going on then. I was learning so many things. I mean, at Stanford, the one required course for all freshmen was Western civilization. They didn't teach you anything about Eastern civilization. It was just all European. And so learning about Buddhism and, you know, the Muslim world and everything else that had gone on historically was a big deal for me. And so I started building geodesic domes in Big Sur. And I had the mathematics from that told you how to create a dome from Popular Mechanics magazine. And people started writing me. They found out about it, and I would write them back, and I thought, you know, I'm writing the same letter over and over again. Why don't I just mimeograph something up, and I'll throw in organic gardening and how to do things for yourself and all the other things, you know, Eastern religions and the Edmund Scientific Catalog, the L.L. Bean Catalog, and the Sears Roebuck and Montgomery Ward Catalogs, which were extremely useful if you were living out, you know, out in the country like I was. So about at that time, I met Stuart Brandt, and he was ahead of me. He had assembled books and everything, and he was getting ready to do the Whole Earth Catalog. So I hooked up with him, and I became the shelter editor of the Whole Earth Catalog. The first catalog came out in, I think, 1968, and it was, I believe, $5. And it just knocked everybody out because it not only had all the information on how to do things, but it was accurate. And that's how I learned how to make books, working for Stuart. And so I was the editor of the Whole Earth Catalog for several years there. That's how I learned how to be a publisher, and that was my role with the Whole Earth Catalog.
A fascinating time that changed the culture in many, many ways. And I lived in Arizona in the 70s, and like so many my age, you know, we all dreamed of having an acre or a half acre like you did. And I wanted to build an adobe on that and do it myself, and we were fascinated with all of this DIY stuff. What is happening today? Do young people still have that opportunity to DIY in the way that you did? Because you mentioned the difference in the cost of buying property, the difference in building permits. Is it all now just living in a van, or can young people still find a place to build their own homestead, if you will?
I think you can, but, the 60s and 70s, it was so easy to get by. Things were so cheap back then. I mean, just like right now, building materials are just sky high. The thing is, I don't think you're going to be within an hour or two of a really good city like, you know, New York or San Francisco or L.A. or Boston or Chicago or Austin. And be able to do what we did back then. I mean, I'm an hour from San Francisco. So if you're going to get a piece of land and build a house on it, you're going to have to get farther away from the city. But I have an awful lot of 30-year-olds who say to me, you know, they like what we were doing back then. They like the idea of building your own home or creating your own shelter with your own hands and maybe growing some food. But I think if I were that age now, I would look around in a small town or a city and find a rundown house that had a good foundation and fix it up, because you've got, and it could be that in a neighborhood you get several people that are doing that, and you could have a community garden, and you've already got water and power and sewage. And so that's an option. You still could build a home like I did 50 years ago. And when I think, what I've told people is, okay, save up enough money so that you can live for a year. Maybe it takes you 5 years, save up, and then take a year off and build your house. And so I think the principles are still the same. I mean, I have never had a mortgage, never paid any rent. And you can imagine what a difference that's made in my life. It's allowed me to do all kinds of things that I would not have been able to do if I had a job. And one of the things I learned when we were doing that farming is you can't be self-sufficient. There's no such thing as self-sufficiency. It's like perfection. You never get there. But the point is to go in that direction. So you do what you can. I mean, maybe you're going to build your own house. Maybe you're going to have to get help with the plumbing and electricity. Maybe you're going to have to subcontract part of it out. You do what you can. Maybe you get a loft in a city and fix it up to live in it. Maybe you get a home on wheels. The tiny homes thing, you know, we did a book called Tiny Homes. It was, I think, maximum 500 square feet. And it was a very popular book, but that's not enough, really. I mean, so it was a buzzword. It was very popular, but... So yes, I think you can do the same thing now. It's not as easy as it was back then. I mean, Leslie and I were living on, I think, $300 a month. And of course, everything is so much more expensive now. But you do what you can. You do. If you're living in an apartment in New York, maybe you build partially on your fire escape. Or you get a school bus. I think a school bus makes a pretty good home because they're large enough and the windows that go all the way around, you're orienting to the outside so you don't feel claustrophobic. And maybe you find a lot in the city where you can park a bus. And so I think it's probably more interesting now because it's so difficult, but I think that you can do that. Where I live in Marin County, I don't know a single person, and I haven't for I don't know how many decades, that's building their own homes the way we were back in the day. We've done two books on nomadic living. One was called Tiny Homes on the Move, and the more recent one was called Rolling Homes. And a lot of people build these little homes on a trailer with wheels, and then it just sits somewhere for 5 or 10 years. I think the thing is, if you're going to build a small home, don't build it on a trailer because that's expensive. To get the trailer, build it so that you can jack it up and move it if you need to. And so that's one thing I think that is possible. But yeah, I think it's possible to to do it, although more difficult. But the point is that it's, if you can avoid a mortgage or avoid a lot of the payment, you know, a substantial amount of paying a mortgage and not pay rent, that's a life-changing experience.
Lloyd, let me change topics if I can, because you're a guy whose entire life has been really defined by an insatiable case of curiosity, if you will. The end is approaching for all of us, some faster than others. Nobody really knows what's tomorrow. But, you know, as a curious guy now in your 90s, what do you think about the next decade?
I think my mom lived to be 103. I figure I've got 10 years maybe. And it's not long, you know, 10 years. So, and I kind of feel like I can do some of my best work now in the last 10 years. But, you know, I do find things like, yeah, sure, everybody says I look younger than my age or act younger, but I feel my age. I'm losing abilities. I'm losing strength. My depth perception is not so good in driving. There will come a time when I won't be able to drive. My neighbor here, he quit driving when he was 96. And I'll get a Tesla or an electric car with robot driving. And so I'll still be, because if I can't drive, that's really, I mean, I've been driving since I was 14. And so, if that doesn't work, I'll just ride a bike. But inevitably, you know, nature is trying to figure out how to take me down. You know, what's it going to be?
Let me ask you one more question, if we can. I would be remiss if I didn't ask Lloyd Kahn, what's the takeaway? What have you learned from, your decades of living life? What's the moral of the story of life? What do you wish younger people knew that you've now learned?
Well, don't be afraid to make mistakes. I think one of the things that kind of my modus operandi is to start. You're not clear on what to do, just start, and the momentum will carry you along. That's what I did in building. I wasn't a journeyman carpenter. I knew some elements of carpentry, but I started to build, and then I had to figure it out once I got rolling. But it's starting is kind of the key factor in a lot of the stuff I do, and in all walks of life, really, just to get rolling. And you'll figure it out.
So the advice for young people, just start. Bust an ageist myth for us, if you will. What can you tell us about being 90 that most younger people don't understand? Because a lot of people think life isn't worth living when you get to be 90.
Well, it is. I mean, the downside is you're losing physical ability, but the upside is that you've got all these years to look back upon, and it's really pretty fascinating. I mean, you know, and I love talking to people that are close to my age about when milk got delivered to the doorstep and gas was 30 cents a gallon, and we didn't have television. You know, we gathered around the radio. But anyway, having that span of time to look back upon is quite wonderful. And also, especially with all that's going on right now in the world. And so I've just started using Perplexity artificial intelligence. And it's a life-changing thing for me in doing research. Being able to utilize those tools and at the same time look back on, 80, 70 years ago, the way things were, it's fascinating and helpful and useful in living my life.
Well, we need more examples like you, Lloyd Kahn. Thank you for all that you do. And you mentioned earlier, and I think I mentioned it in the lead-in, you now have a Substack, which is basically a blog where you can share your thoughts. And if people want to subscribe to your Substack, how do they do that?
Just go Google or whatever search engine you use, Substack and my name, Lloyd Kahn. And you find the Substack, and then you can subscribe. It's free. And Instagram, those two things I'm doing. And then I'll do a book every couple of years, maybe. The next book I do probably will be called Learning to Build. So I, you know, I'm still fascinated by communication, and that's what I love to do.
The power of community and the power of curiosity. Lloyd Kahn, a great example of both. Lloyd, thanks so much for your time. That's Lloyd Kahn, still driven by the power of community and the power of curiosity in his 90s. Check out his Substack and his Instagram. Coming up, they're paying attention. 30 and 40-somethings inspired by active 80 to 100-year-olds are saying, I want some of that, and they're making lifestyle choices to support happy, healthy, active aging. This is Growing Bolder.
Embrace the health and longevity movement with the Fountain of Youth monthly e-newsletter. Growing Boulder and the National Senior Games Association have teamed up to bring you the latest videos, podcasts, and articles on inspirational masters athletes and the many benefits of physical activity delivered right to your inbox. Just go to nsga.com/connect to sign up for free today. The Fountain of Youth, because if you want to keep moving, you have to keep moving.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. Masters and senior sports are now exploding worldwide, and the surprise is that the fastest growing group isn't the oldest athletes, it's the 30 and 40-year-olds like Jess D'Amico who are inspired by the oldest athletes. When Jess D'Amico injured her foot and couldn't walk, she knew she had to find some way to keep moving.
And I couldn't even like really do mental health walks for a few months. I have learned from experience that if I let my body stop moving, then my brain stops moving and I get sad. So I immediately signed up to swim laps at the pool.
It only took a few laps to awaken her long dormant competitive spirit, and before she knew it, she was dancing on the deck and cheering for her competitors at the Rowdy Gaines Masters Classic, her first swimming meet in decades. She waved to her husband Mike and daughter Rosie in the stands, and when the starter told the swimmers to relax, she complied. Finally, after more than two decades, Jess D'Amico was a competitive swimmer again.
I think I'm a little emotional to have done that for the first time in 20 years, and I cannot wait for my next race. And it was very exciting because I knew my Rosie was watching and she wants to be a swimmer, and that was very cool.
Go, Mama, go!
That's right.
Mama, go!
It was really fun. I recorded it from way before it started to way after it ended.
Go, Mama, go!
And Rosie and I were cheering her on the whole time. Important to both of us that we continue competing and exercising and showing Rosie that just because you get older doesn't mean that you stop being an athlete.
How proud are you of her?
Extremely, extremely. I can't wait to go take Rosie home for a quick nap and get back here for the other events.
Inspired by older swimmers, Jess is now determined to pass that inspiration on to others, including her daughter Rosie.
What's the moral to the story, Jess? What would you tell someone out there that's sitting on the couch?
You don't have to come in first place to win. And swimming rules. You gonna be on the swim team, my girl? Rosie's gonna be on the swim team. And what are we gonna say when you're in the pool? Go, Rosie. I did have a few people tell me, oh, I have such admiration for you for doing this today. And I was actually confused by that because I didn't think of this as like courageous. I just thought of it as a fun thing to do. And also, there's nothing like hearing people cheer for you, especially if you're an attention seeker like me and my baby.
The power of example and the chain of inspiration. Jess was inspired by older swimmers and is now swimming herself to inspire her daughter. You know, we all have the ability to make a difference, not just in our own lives, but also in the lives of others. We may not be able to do all the things we once could as well as we once did. There is no question that we do lose a little speed on our fastball, but what we don't lose are the most important human qualities of all. Things like kindness, wisdom, passion, compassion, empathy, resilience, creativity, curiosity, patience, gratitude, perspective, persistence. These are adult superpowers that not only don't diminish with age, they become more powerful. So let go of that which matters least and focus on that which matters most, because that's Growing Boulder.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.